feedback. I waited to turn this on. So thank you, Marshall. And thank you, all of you who've come out this morning. This is a very special program for me to do. And as Marshall said, I've come here before to do Advent programs at Nassau Presbyterian. And it's always very special to me to be able to come here and share an Advent story. I have a cheat sheet here for the things that I want to say. Today's story, probably you all know who Leo Tolstoy is, the 19th century Russian author who wrote Anna Karenina, War and Peace, but you may not know that he also wrote fables and short stories, of which this might be the most well-known one. Now, a few words for the newcomers about the oral tradition of telling stories. This is not a performance. I'm not an actor up here who is going to tell the story word for word. If you'd like to read the story, it's in the public domain. You can find it, as my friend Catherine did, very easily on the internet to read it word for word. Instead, what I do as a practitioner of the oral tradition is to try to get the spirit of Tolstoy's message across to you. Might say I translate it. Where's Margaret? So that I memorize, or I have the first word and the first sentence and the last sentence, and then together we are going to make the story come alive. We storytellers say that storytelling is not a spectator sport. It's something we all do together. I'm hoping that as I am speaking, you will be visualizing what is happening, and a certain image, certain spray of words will catch your imagination, and we will share Tolstoy's story together, and in that way, make it come alive. Now, in thinking about telling this story, I came across several titles for the story. Sometimes it's known as the title we'll use, Where Love Is, God Is Also. Sometimes it's known as What Men Live By. And sometimes it's known simply as Martin the Cobbler. I wore boots today, for that's in the story. But think about the shoes that you are wearing. I know when I tell stories frequently in classrooms, the kids are all wearing sneakers. Our shoes wear out, we just go and buy another pair. I found a pair of leather boots that have been rattling around in the trunk of my car because I didn't want to give them up. And the sole needs to be repaired. In Tolstoy's time, you didn't just go and buy another pair of shoes. And a pair of boots was meant to last a lifetime. And Martin was not a shoemaker. A shoemaker was one who made shoes to fit your specific feet. Martin was a cobbler. He was the person you went to when those boots that were rattling around in my trunk needed to have new soles or a new heel or needed to be restitched. Maybe he might add a leather upper to help you out. It was a humble profession, kind of a second-class citizen, actually, to shoemakers. So our story, it's important to know that Martin was this kind of worker, this kind of professional laborer in our story. So with that, let us begin. Ubi caritas est vera, Deus ibi est. Where love is, God is also. In a busy Russian town, there lived a cobbler named Martin. Martin lived in a basement room, a single room. There he had his bed, his table to eat dinner, and his workbench, which was below a window. And from that window, Martin could watch the people who passed by. He could only see their boots, but he knew them by their boots. If he wanted to see their faces, he had to crane forward and look up. But mostly, he just watched as the boots went by. Now, Martin was well known as a cobbler because he did not charge exorbitant prices, and he used good materials. And if someone came to him and said that they needed the boots repaired by a certain time, if Martin could do it, he said so. But if he could not, he said that too. And so he was known to be reliable, a good worker, and he was respected for the job that he did. When Martin was apprenticed to his master, he had married, but his wife was now long gone, and the children that they had all died in childhood. When his wife left him, when she passed from this world to the next, she left him with a 3-year-old son, Capiton. Martin thought that perhaps he should send Capiton to his sister, who lived in a faraway village, to be brought up. But then he couldn't bear the thought of it. He thought how strange it would be for Capiton to be in a strange place with a strange family. So he kept the boy with him. And together they moved to where Martin was now. And as the boy grew, Martin began to teach him about being a cobbler, and the boy began to help him. But then Capiton became sick, and in a week's time, he too was gone. Martin fell into a deep despair. He railed against God. Why had God not taken him, an old man, instead of Capiton, who had his whole life ahead of him? Martin had been a churchgoer, but now he stopped going to church and fell deeper and deeper into melancholy. After some time, an acquaintance from where Martin used to live, who had become a pilgrim and had been traveling 7 or 8 years, visited a nearby monastery and heard about Martin and came to visit him. The two men sat down, they talked for a while, and then Martin unburdened all his sorrows to his pilgrim friend. "I wish I was dead. I have nothing to live for. I have no hope." Martin, you cannot say such things. God gave you life, and it is to God that you must give your life. You must live for God." "Live for God? What does that mean?" "Martin, if God had wanted you, he would have taken you instead of Capiton. You must realize that you are pinning your happiness on God, not pinning your happiness on God. In fact, you are unhappy because you are thinking only of your own happiness. Now, you can read, right? Get yourself a copy of the New Testament and read what is there. There the Lord tells us how to live for God. That is what you must do." After the pilgrim friend left, Martin decided to take his advice. He went and he bought a copy of the Good Book. At first, he intended only to read it on holidays, Sundays. He would finish his work, and then after having his meal, sit down at the kitchen table and read a few verses and then think about what they said. But he found that reading like this gave him great comfort. And so he started to do it more and more often. Martin had been the kind of person who, when the holidays came, he would go to a tavern. There he would have a little bit more than tea, maybe a little bit more than that, and maybe a little bit more again. And that would make him jolly, but that jolliness might make him loud, and that loudness might make him abusive if somebody said something to him on the way home. Now, he gave all that up and preferred instead to, at the end of the day, pull down the oil lamp, open up the good book, read a few verses, and then sit back and ponder what they might mean for him. It happened that one evening, Martin was reading, and he was so enthralled that he did not want to stop. He came to the story of the centurion and the centurion's child, to the widow's mite. And then he came to the story of when the Lord was invited to the Pharisee's house for dinner, and how a woman of disreputable reputation had stormed into the dining area, flung herself at the feet of the Lord, crying, wiping his feet with her tears, how she had used her hair to dry his feet, kissing his feet, and then poured precious perfume all over his feet. The Pharisee who had invited the Lord to dinner rebuked him for allowing such a person to come so near. But the Lord had said, "Simon, when I came to your house, did you offer me a basin to wash my feet? No. But this woman has washed my feet with her tears. Did you welcome me by anointing my head, giving me a kiss? No. But this woman has kissed my feet and anointed them with precious perfume." Martin sat back to think about this story. He sat back, and after a few moments, he said, "I am like this Pharisee." "Oh, yes. It's easy enough. I live alone. It's easy enough to think of myself as good. But what do I do for a guest? Who is my guest? What would I do if the Lord came to visit me?" Well, now it was late at night, and you know how it is when it's late at night and you're reading and your head slowly drops on your chest and you doze off, and that's what happened to Martin. He dozed off, and then he heard a voice. "Martin, Martin." His head jerked up. He looked all around. "Who's there? Who's there?" Of course, no one was there. And so he sat back down again to think about the story. And he fell asleep again. And when he fell asleep again, the voice came back. "Martin, Martin, look for me tomorrow. I am coming to visit you." Martin's head jerked up again. What was that strange thing? What was that voice? No, it had to be a dream. But it sounded so real. Martin got up, he turned off the oil lamp, he put it aside, he put the good book away, and he climbed into bed to go to sleep. The next morning, when he awoke, Snow had fallen, and so there was an eerie light in the room. Martin got up, as he always did, and he began his daily preparations. He made some cabbage soup, put it on the stove for later on. He made some porridge to eat. He put water in the samovar, the tea maker, so he could have tea later on. And then he put on his leather apron, and he went to his workbench where there was his hammer and his awl and the needle and threads that he used to repair boots. He had a pair of boots that needed repair. He sat down on his workbench, but he couldn't stop thinking about that voice and how real it was and how, what if the Lord did come to visit him? It was possible. Martin started working, but he didn't get very far. He kept looking up to the window, kept looking up for whose boots were going to walk, maybe the Lord's. Well, he worked for a while, and then he heard a shovel. Of course, it was Stepanich. Stepanich was an old soldier. He had come back from his military service a broken man. The kindness of the merchant who owned the building had given him a room. That merchant had given Stepanich a room. And in return, Stepanich was to help the house porter with things that needed being done in the building. And so here was Stepanich, shoveling snow. And Martin watched for a while, and then he thought, it's cold out there. Stepanich must be very cold. What am I doing sitting here? And so Martin went up the stairs, he opened the door, and he said, Stepanich, my good man, come in, have some tea. Well, Stepanich was startled but pleased because he was cold. He set the shovel aside. He went inside Martin's door. He began to stamp his feet to get the snow off. Martin said, no mind. Don't mind that. Just come down. And the two men sat at Martin's table. Martin got two saucers and two cups, and he poured tea for both men. Stepanich down that first cup of tea instantly. So Martin poured him a second cup of tea. And then the two men began to talk. But Stepanich noticed that Martin kept looking to the window. Are you expecting someone? Well, you will think me a foolish man. But something strange happened to me last night. I heard a voice. I know. I was reading the good book. I was reading the story about the Pharisee who invites the Lord to dinner. You know that one. The one which the woman comes running in and she's crying and she cries over the Lord's feet and she wipes his feet with her tears and she anoints his feet with precious perfume and, well, I dozed off and I heard my name. Not only did I hear my name, but I heard the voice say that the Lord was coming to visit me today. I know. Foolish. Well, could be possible. And with that, the two men began to talk some more, and Martin, in his enthusiasm, began to tell Stepanich stories that he had been reading. Stepanich couldn't read, but he knew these stories from growing up and hearing them, and tears began to fall down his cheeks. And after a third cup of tea, Stepanich stood up and said, Martin, you have given me comfort, both soul and body, and I thank you. And Martin walked Stepanich to the door and said goodbye. And the two men went back to their work, Stepanich to shovel snow, and Martin to his workbench, where the boots were waiting for him. But as he picked up the needle and thread to begin to bind the boots, he couldn't help but keep looking out the window. Oh, there were the boots of the house porter. Oh, there went the baker. Oh, there was a soldier now in the military. He had good boots, new boots. In between watching, Martin would try to do some work. He got involved, and all of a sudden, he heard a baby cry. Who could that be? He looked up, he saw woolen socks and wooden shoes. He craned to see the face. It was a stranger, a young woman. She had the baby in her arms. The baby was crying and crying. She was wearing summer clothes. Oh, she must be freezing. Martin said, what am I doing here? He ran up the stairs, opened the door. Good woman, come in, come in. You must help your baby, you must be so cold. Come in. The woman looked at Martin. She was cold, the baby was crying, but should she trust him? She decided he looked kindly enough and she followed him into his room. Here, sit on the bed, and you can nurse your child here. I have no milk. I've barely eaten. Ah, well then, leave the child here on the bed. I've had children, I know what to do. And you come sit here and have something to eat. And the young woman did this. She sat at the table, leaving the child on the bed, and Martin went, he got some of that cabbage soup he had made, and he got a little bread, and he brought it to the table. And then, as the mother began to eat, he went over to where the baby was lying. Well, now, he knew the baby probably wanted to suck on his finger, but they were full of wax and dirty from working on the boots, so he knew he couldn't do that. He tried to smile, he had few teeth, but he tried to make funny faces so the baby would laugh, and then he waved his hand, and that startled the baby from crying. And the baby looked up at Martin, and he made some more funny faces, and it made the baby smile, and Martin smiled back as well. And while he was doing this, the mother began to tell her story, how she was a soldier's wife, and the soldier husband had been gone for 7 months at least without any word. She had been happy with work as a cook, but when the baby came, they let her go. And, well, she was able to keep afloat for a while, selling the things that she had, but then it ran out. And she had tried to find work as a wet nurse, but when they took one look at how thin she was refused. And so in desperation, she had come to that town because she had a relative there. And the relative said that she would help her, found her lodgings where the landlady, bless her, had allowed her to live there even though she couldn't pay full rent all the time. And the relative had put her in touch with a merchant's wife who said she would employ her. And she had gone to the merchant's wife just that morning. But the merchant's wife said, come back in a week. And now, how was she going to manage for a week? Well, have you no warmer clothes? I pawned my winter shawl this morning for 20 kopeck piece. Well, all right then. And the mother took the baby up and sat on the bed and began to nurse the child. And while she did that, Martin went to a cupboard and went rummaging around and found an old wool coat. Pulled it out. He said, ah, this will do. You can take this. The young woman looked at Martin and she looked at the coat. And she looked at the marten again, and she burst into tears. "Oh my, the good Lord must have sent you. I don't know what I would have done. I don't know what to say, but thank you." "Now, now, now, you take the coat. It'll keep you warm." And as the young woman put the coat on around herself and her baby, Martin fished out a 20-kopeck piece and said, "Now you take this and you go redeem your shawl." "Oh, thank you, thank you. The Lord must have sent you." And he walked her up the steps to the door and watched as she walked away. Now the light was fading. You know how it is in winter when the sun seems to go down ever earlier, and Martin could see there was not too much day left, but enough to get a little more work done. So he went back down and sat in front of his workbench and again picked up his tools. He began to work, and the light faded and faded. It was almost gone, but there was still some sunlight when he saw the old apple woman, the granny he knew. She came and she stopped right in front of the window. And she put down a basket. Oh, she put it down lightly. She must have sold a lot of apples. And then he saw that on one shoulder she had a pack, a bag. And the bag looked to be full of wood chips. She must have gone to the construction site and filled the bag with wood chips to use in the fire. Oh, it would be useful. But the bag was heavy, and the chips must be sharp. And she was trying to shift it from her weight, and she turned. And as she turned, a youngster in a torn cap came and sidled next to her and snatched one of the apples. But Granny was quick. She turned just in time. She grabbed his sleeve, and when she did, his cap fell off. And then she reached for his hair. "Thief! Thief! Thief! Let me go! Let me go! Let me go!" Martin heard all the screaming. He saw everything that happened. He rushed from his workbench. His glasses fell. He burst out of the door to separate the two warring parties. "Now, now, now, now. This can't be. Well, now, Granny, you must forgive him his foolishness. He's only a boy. You must forgive him." "Forgive him? I should call the police on him. He needs a thrashing." "Ah, well, those are our ways. Those are not God's ways. He needs to be forgiven. We need to show mercy." "Mercy? Well, I don't know. I still think he needs to learn a lesson." "Yes, lessons. But aren't we the ones who are supposed to be teaching the lessons?" "Ah, yes, well, I have raised children of my own. Only my daughter is left. And she, with her children, they are dear children, but they do foolish things." "Yes, I guess you are right. And he should be forgiven such foolishness." And then Martin turned to the boy. "And now you. You must ask for forgiveness, too." "I didn't do anything." "Oh, yes, you did. You snatched that apple. You see that window? I saw everything." "Oh. I'm sorry." "All right, now. Now that you've made peace, Granny, I will pay you for the apple. And you two will go off now in peace. But when the boy saw that the granny was trying to pick up that heavy bag of wood chips, he said, "Granny, I'll take that for you. I'm going your way. I'll carry it for you." And so he did. He picked up the heavy pack, and then Granny took one end of the apple basket, and the boy took the other, and Martin watched smiling as they began to walk down the road together. And feeling that he had done a good thing, Martin went back to his room, found the eyeglasses on the stairs, and luckily they had not broken, put them back on his face, and then Oh, the light was gone. Well, he had done enough work for that day, he thought. He ranged the boots to pick up where he had left off the next day, put his tools away, pulled the oil lamp down, and got his copy of the good book. He meant to pick up where he had left off the day before. He had a strip of leather left over from repairing some boots that he used as a bookmark. But the book seemed to open of its own accord to another place. And Martin looked down and he read, "For I was hungry, and you gave me to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me." Suddenly, the light in the room changed, and Martin looked up startled, because over in the corner, it was a strange light, and he heard that voice again. And the voice said, "Martin, did you recognize me?" "Recognize you? Recognize who?" And out from the corner stepped the figure of Stepanich. "It is I, Martin." And then the figure disappeared. And then again, out from the corner stepped the young mother with the baby. "It is I." And then she too vanished. And then a few moments later, out stepped the apple woman and the boy. And together they said, "It is I." And then the light returned to the way it had been. And Martin looked down again at the good book and read, "Whenever you have done this for the least of these, you have done it for me." And in that moment, Martin understood. He understood that the voice had been real, that it had not been a dream, and that indeed the Lord had visited him that day.
Time for a couple of questions. Anyone with any questions?
Actually, you know what? Let's just sit for a few moments with the story, and maybe there's an image, a particular image, or a string of words that kind of resonated with you, felt important, that you'd like to bring home with you and think about some more. Let's just take a moment to do that before, and then maybe some questions will bubble up, and if not, that's fine too.
How many other fables did Tolstoy write?
I don't have a number. I do have a book, and I believe that he wrote them for a school that he helped on his estate. He had an estate. I see that Lorraine is nodding her head. Yes, that he wrote for the school children there. Yes, Catherine.
I think the image of him looking out the window with expectation, and his expectations were so different than what he saw. And I think that's important for all of us, that if we cling to that expectation and don't accept what we see, you can be very disappointed.
No, thank you, Catherine. Thank you. Yes.
Well, thank you for sharing all this. Have you seen how the cross cultures, the stories, like Fables of Aesop, and also some Persian fables at that time, is there any cross-culture connection? Because various stories find in the different cultures with the different titles, but the moral and sometimes characters have been changed.
Right. Yes, there are themes that seem to be universal, that appear in culture after culture, and it is just as you said. The characters may have different names, the settings are different because they are relevant to the culture where the story is being told, but the underlying messages are often the same. And there's actually, in the 19th century, there was a great effort to try to pinpoint all these themes across Western stories. But yes, absolutely, the stories resonate from culture to culture. It's different with literary stories, but in my opinion, a lot of those literary stories are just picking up what the oral tradition has been saying for a long time and infusing them in yet another version. Yes?
Just a comment that I really loved, the reversal of a character who gets to know the people in his town by the feet instead of the face. It was a really interesting flip. the expectations that you have.
Exactly. And the fact that Tolstoy chose a cobbler, right? A repairer of souls to learn about repairing souls.
One more question?
Just to carry the metaphor, one more. He was a cobbler, worked the feet. You read the story. Washing the feet, recognize people by their feet, and the face is what we show the world. The feet is how we do our walking, what we do.
Interesting feet.
I know you couldn't help it.
It's amazing this Russian could pull off so many puns in English.
It's time to put our best foot forward. Oh. We're going to be taking the next 2 weeks off in adult education for Christmas and New Year's. We'll be leading off with Annalise Hume in a new series, January 7th, called Journeys in Faith. We hope you'll join us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Oh.